Welcome to the 73 Dream Studios Variety Show.
Hello, everyone. It's time to grapple with Ray. And this week, I'm going to be giving you guys a very subdued New England report. I'm going to be covering a couple of the events that happened on the most recent SmackDown, the Hall of Fame. But of course, this episode is all about WrestleMania 38. I'll talk about NXT Stand and Deliver while I'm at it, too. So with that said, let's get right into it. So New England at this time, it's pretty barren. A lot of the wrestlers have actually gone down to Dallas to work at the WrestleMania weekend card. We had a lot of stuff happening with GCW's The Collective events. I will say March 26th, we had Limitless Wrestling produce a show called The Thrill of It in Yarmouth, Maine. We got to see the Circus Ninjas defeat Prestigious. And after that match, it appears that the natural Channing Thomas is a bit peeved that John Alba hasn't been at ringside, so he says that he's going to be in a match next month at the on April 30th, and that he wants only John Alba in his corner. He doesn't want Brett Ryan Goslin. He doesn't want the Let's Wrestle champion, Mac Daniels. He just wants John Alba to be in his corner. So we're going to be looking forward to that match. Beefer, who you guys may have seen on YouTube for Major League Wrestling, he defeated Slade. Alec Price successfully defended the Limitless Wrestling heavyweight title against Brian Keefe. Arts' Aaron Rourke and Ricky Smokes defeated MSP. But these two are keeping the name of Art in the American picture, while Ava Everett is, I believe she's still the WXW Women's Champion. I haven't heard much reports from Germany, but I do believe she is still the Women's Champion at the time of this recording. We got to see an Impact Wrestling showcase with Jonah defeating Speedball Mike Bailey. Brad Cashew defeated Ichiban in a University Rules match. Mosja Slamovich defeated Del Miexo. And Rip Bison won a triple threat match against The Alternative, Anthony Green, and J.D. Drake to become the number one contender. So now it's going to be Rip Bison versus Alec Price. Once again, that's April 30th in Yarmouth, Maine, in a show that will also feature former WWE superstar Gangrel. Continuing to look to the future for New England Report, we're actually going to be having a big month in April. Both WWE and AEW are hosting shows in New England. First, AEW is going to be making their third trip ever to the Adonis Arena in Boston on April 6th. This is to be followed the next week when WWE hosts Friday Night SmackDown in Worcester, Massachusetts on April 15th. Of course, you're also going to have other killer shows to keep an eye on, like Atlantic Pro Wrestling, Saturday, April 16th in Newburyport, featuring Ilio Markopoulos defending the heavyweight title against Dirty Dango. Two more tag team tournament matches, Owen Brody challenging Randy Rivera for the New England title he never lost, and much more. All right, now we're going to go to SmackDown. The most recent SmackDown featured a couple of WrestleMania-worthy matches. We got to see Madcap Moss win the Andre the Giant Memorial Battle Royal, or as anyone who uses Twitter may have seen, possibly renamed to Andrew the Giant. Yeah, I don't know. Someone probably got screamed at by the production department on that one. But Madcap Moss joins the list of names such as Jey Uso, Baron Corbin, before he was happy, and Cesaro and Big Show. So Madcap Moss adds his name to that list with the Battle Royal victory. I'm honestly going to be saying I'm pretty shocked that it was him. I mean, this match featured the United States champion Finn Balor, who, by the way, despite his title, couldn't get on the actual WrestleMania card. Instead, he got thrown in the Battle Royal and ended up being the last man eliminated. We also got to see Ricochet retain his Intercontinental title, continuing a theme here of singles champions not getting booked on the WrestleMania card. He retained it in a triple threat match, despite both of his opponents being tag team partners, Angel and Humberto of Los Lotharios. Then in preview to future WrestleMania matches, we got to see Sasha Banks and Naomi defeat Carmella and Zelina Vega in a non-title match. Austin Theory and the Usos defeated Finn Balor, Shinsuke Nakamura, and Rick Boogs in a six-man tag. Following SmackDown, we got to enjoy the 2022 Hall of Fame induction ceremony, We got to see Braun Breaker induct the Steiner Brothers into the Hall of Fame. I'm going to be honest, the Steiner Brothers, they were before my time. I wasn't that big into the Steiner Brothers, even when looking back at archive footage. Scott Steiner, though, everyone talks about Scott Steiner. I feel like Scott could still be inducted in the future for his single success alone. But WWE is electing to induct the brothers together. They are former WWF Tag Team Champions, former WCW World Tag Team Champions. I bet Scott Steiner has gone on to be a WCW World Heavyweight Champion as well. So the brothers have joined the Hall of Fame. There was a nice little funny moment where Rick made fun of Scott. Scott told a story about him, Macho Man, and some cows. I'm not going to lie, I kind of thought there was some innuendo going on there. I wasn't sure if we were actually talking about farm animals for a minute, knowing Scott. And then Rick would kind of jibe at him and be like, well, like always, you took up all our mic time. They gave us 4 minutes. You took 3 of them. So Rick took his minute to thank everyone, and they were on their way. Booker T inducted Charmel, and I gotta say, I was very disappointed in all the Twitter backlash. Like, yes, I did have that instinctive feeling of, why Charmel? But at the same time, when you really look at it, why not? This is a woman that has made a career of being a manager for one of the greatest World Heavyweight Champions of all time. Yeah, I said it. I said Booker T is one of the greatest World Heavyweight Champions of all time. He was a 5-time champion in WCW. He was a King of the Ring, and he won the World Heavyweight title in the WWE. So yes, I believe he belongs on the list. Is he the GOAT, period? No, I'm not going to say that, but he belongs on the list. And Charmel belongs in the Hall of Fame for being by his side and helping him become the man that he is. And I'm disappointed in the Twitter backlash that faced it, because to be quite honest, how would you guys feel if you were being recognized for your accomplishments, and everyone online with a keyboard said, why? What have they done? Charmel's deserving of it. I'm happy that Charmel's in the Hall of Fame. Granted, I will agree with you that I do think Victoria should also be in the Hall of Fame as well, but I digress. The recipient of the Warrior Award this year was Shad Gaspard, as accepted by his wife and his child. Shad Gaspard recently lost his life saving his son from the dirge of a riptide. He shoved his son into the hands of the Coast Guard before the riptide pulled them away. They eventually found Shad's body, and it was a very tragic death. I'm happy they gave this Warrior Award to Shad and found a way to honor him. It was a very nice, heartwarming moment for the family to be able to take this and help them with their grieving process, so You can't say that WWE doesn't still think about families. We got to see a posthumous induction for Vader, as accepted by his family. I did like Vader. Vader was never a talent that was before my time, but I did appreciate looking back at his archive footage, his rivalry of Shawn Michaels, despite how controversial that may be in hindsight. But his rivalry with Sting was absolutely amazing. The White Castle of Fear strap match. I gotta put that out there. Terrible name, but Vader and Sting worked very well together. And yeah, honestly. And not to mention his work in Japan. And if you want to talk about badass, Vader literally had his eye knocked out of its socket, and he shoved it back in place and continued the match. That's something that would not be allowed to happen today by any means. Vader was a consummate badass. He was a true professional. Absolutely love him. Absolutely deserving of putting the Mastodon and into the Hall of Fame. And finally, The Undertaker. I'm going to say right now, I feel like they should have put the Hall of Fame on Thursday so everyone could have had some time. But because we knew that The Undertaker and Vince combined were going to be like an hour, pretty much everyone else got roughly 5 to 10 minutes. So I was a little disappointed in that. I feel like they totally could have some more fun with the speeches. But anyway, Undertaker managed to get an hour, and he did not disappoint with his speech. Him and Vince McMahon had a lot of fun. Undertaker got a lavalier mic because he was going to walk around while he gave his speech, as is fitting. He gets to talk and give a story that he's never been able to give before because he was so dedicated to this character. It was nice to hear all these tidbits from The Undertaker. Honestly, I want Taker to write a book so I can read it. I love reading wrestling autobiographies. I'm going to be reading a biography on the original Sheik eventually. I think by the time this recording comes out, it's available in print. I'm still waiting for it to be available on Kindle. But I digress. The Undertaker is an amazing talent. I loved hearing him. I got teared up when he was speaking to his daughter. I loved him when he asked his daughter, "What do you want the world to know about you?" And his daughter said, "I don't care what the world thinks of me." And just seeing the pride in Taker's eyes when he was recounting how his daughter said that, he was just he told his daughter that he hopes that never changes. He got to tell funny stories about his wife Michelle. He swore that he would never tell the stories of him and what are they called? The Bone Skull Crew, the BSK, him, Godfather, Yokozuna, and more. And Undertaker got to finish up the speech. He put on one of the four jackets that they had around the ring. I believe it was my favorite jacket too. The one that was representative of his time as the Dead Man from WrestleMania 20 to like 2010. That was my favorite era of Undertaker. That was when I started becoming a fan of wrestling in general. So seeing that him put on that gear, that was special to me. And when he put it on, he bowed his head slightly and said, "Never say never." So who knows? Maybe Taker will come back. I'm very much of a belief that his match with AJ Styles was a fitting send-off. So I do hope that Taker rides off into the sunset. But if, who knows, maybe there's a little gas left in the tank. Who knows? All right, now we're moving on to Saturday, specifically noon Saturday. From noon to 3, we had NXT Stand and Deliver. It was like, yeah, I think it was noon to like 3:30 or 4. On the pre-show, Dakota Kai and Raquel Gonzalez defeated Toxic Attraction's Gigi Dolin and JC Jane to win the NXT Women's Tag Team titles. Okay, I like this booking. I'm not a fan of what led to the booking, though. Like, I wish we could have had Dakota Kai and Wendy Chu win the Dusty Rhodes Tag Team Classic. I don't like that Io Shirai and Kaylee Ray won the Classic and then immediately gave up their tag title shot to join the women's title match. If that was the plan all along, I feel like we should have just had them in the mat, like, around that story to begin with. I don't feel like or at least have them lose the finals to Dakota Kai and Wendy Chu because Toxic Attraction got involved. Like, I don't like that, and I also kind of wish that Dakota and Wendy could continue their team, but I understand that this is a feel-good moment. Dakota Kai and Raquel Gonzalez are teaming up again. They were the first ever NXT Women's Tag Team Champions. People forget about that, but they won the first ever NXT Women's Dusty Cup. They became the first ever NXT Women's Tag Team Champions. They deserve this. This is an absolutely feel-good moment. Wendy Chu still got to have a moment as well when she interfered in the match to distract Gigi Dolin. So Dakota and Raquel winning this match was fitting, and I'm very happy with the booking there. To open the main card, we got to see the ladder match of the NXT North American Championship. Now, Santos Escobar, Grayson Waller, and Solo Sikoa, they did not have a lost story going into this. The two main story components of this was Carmelo Hayes, the champion going in, the A champion wanted to prove himself, prove that he's the A-champion by taking on all comers in a brutal ladder match. And Cameron Grimes was the main challenger heading into this, as he wanted to win the title in honor of his father. There were some terrific moments in this match. Santos Escobar stole the show repeatedly. I'm getting a new appreciation for Santos's work, especially seeing him hit that sunset flip powerbomb. I'm trying to remember who he hit it on. I think he hit it on Solo Sikoa. And he did the powerbomb on him, and it ended up powerbombing him into a never ladder. And when I watched it happen, I watched a replay very closely, because in my mind I was like, did Santos hit his head? Did he get hurt? Because he stood there for a while just looking at the wreckage he made. I was like, did he get concussed? And on the replay, it's like, no, he pulled that move off perfectly. Both competitors were as safe as they could possibly be in that moment. Santos is a terrific worker. I'm excited for what's in his future. A very scary moment was Grayson Waller jumped off a ladder to hit an elbow drop on Carmelo Hayes, who was laying on another ladder that was propped up between the barricade and the ring. Trick Williams pulled Carmelo Hayes off, so Grayson Waller hit with his full weight of his arm on the ladder and then his body crushing it. And I haven't heard an official report on Grayson Waller as of yet. I'm afraid he broke his arm. Like, he was screaming in pain, and as he was writhing in agony, every part of his body was moving except for the arm. The arm was perfectly still. At one point, he had his leg on top of his arm. And I'm just like, that's not normal. Like, he's, like, his arm's broken. I don't think he can move his arm. They kept the cameras off of him after that. They replayed the moment because it was a highlight. But the end result of the match was that after damn near caving in Santos Escobar's skull, Cameron Grimes climbed the ladder and won the NXT North American title in a match dedicated to his father. In a heartfelt send-off, Tony D'Angelo defeated Tommaso Ciampa to continue the trend of the stars of NXT Black and Gold putting over the new stars of NXT 2.0. I'm not seeing the Tony D'Angelo gimmick. I feel like it is possible for him to evolve because, let's face it, with a gimmick like his, he's like an Italian mafioso, a Don, and you can either go the route of Nunzio. And if you don't know who Nunzio is, think Little Guido. And if you still don't know who Little Guido is, well, you know where I'm going with this. Or you could go the route of Razor Ramon. May he rest in peace. Because, God damn it, Razor Ramon had a gimmick that probably could have killed him. It probably could have killed his career. But he was a good enough wrestler between the ropes that he was able to evolve past the gimmick and have a career that was more than just a cheap gimmick that was based off The Godfather. So Tony D'Angelo, with this match, I want to see him with different competitors because Tommaso Ciampa can make anyone look good. Let's just put it out there. Tommaso Ciampa's absolutely amazing. He can make anyone look great. He can put a 5-star match on with anyone. That said, this is a heartfelt goodbye to Tommaso Ciampa. I don't know if he's leaving WWE period or if he's just leaving NXT. Triple H came out and he kind of hugged Ciampa and there were tears, so I'm thinking he might be leaving for good. However, Ciampa has been appearing on main roster television. He was in the Andre the Giant Memorial Battle Royal on SmackDown. He's been wrestling on WWE Main Event against the likes of T-Bar and Cedric Alexander. So I'm not sure. We're going to have to wait and see what's in Ciampa's future, but it's possible he may be leaving NXT. We know he's leaving NXT. It's possible he's leaving WWE for good. The tag titles, MSK, are the new tag team champions. I was honestly surprised to see that. They defeated the current champions, Marcel Barfel and Fabian Aichner of Imperium, and the Creed brothers of Diamond Mind. I thought this was the Creed brothers' time. I genuinely did. The Creed brothers, if I'm remembering correctly, the Creed brothers won the NXT Dusty Rhodes Tag Team Classic, so I thought for sure they were going to win the tag titles. But now the Creed brothers are going to be in a storyline with whoever jumped them. And that's either going to be a new tag team, or my current theory is that it's Joaquin Phoenix and Raul Mendoza of Legado del Fantasma. So I think they're just going to go into a rivalry with them. MSK is probably going to stay in a rivalry with Imperium to fight over the tag team titles. Then we got the match that I was the most looking forward to for Stand and Deliver's card, the women's title match. This was another match where I thought it was Cora Jade's time. But it wasn't. Cora Jade signed the WWE at the age of 21. She's the youngest competitor in this match, facing veterans such as Mandy Rose, Kaylee Ray, Io Shirai, all of them former or current champions. Mandy Rose, the current NXT Women's Champion. Kaylee Ray, the longest reigning NXT UK Women's Champion in history. And Io Shirai, a former NXT Women's Champion and a former NXT Women's Tag Team Champion. That said, Mandy Rose did retain. It was a very well-paced match, and I'm noticing that Mandy almost pinned Cora, but then she turned and pinned Io. I don't think that was meant to be a storyline beat. I think that was more Mandy almost went to pin Cora and then remembered, no, wait, the direction was not to pin Cora, because I do feel WWE sees something in Cora Jade. They want to protect her. They want to build her to be a future champion. Maybe it's just a case of not yet. So I do think WWE has faith in Cora Jade. WWE's been moving forward with the youth movement a lot lately, which I can respect. the whole signing of Gable Stevenson, that was blown up like crazy, but really that was just one talent of many that got signed from their first college recruitment process. And they started a second college recruitment process this WrestleMania week that I'm still waiting to hear reports on. So to see WWE building towards a future like this, while also having Mandy Rose, who, while still young herself, has way more experience than Cora Jade at this point in her career. So, more WWE experience, I should say. But Mandy Rose is still the champion, and I want to say that Cora Jade is going to be the one to dethrone her eventually. But we're going to have to work our way back up there. We got to see Gunther defeat LA Knight. I gotta say, as much as I like the talents that are involved in this, Gunther, formerly known as Walter, is just an amazing big man, hard power striker. I pay attention to most of his matches, and LA Knight is such a charismatic talent that these two, I feel like if their program had a better build of this match, I would have been more invested in it. However, I was starting to feel a little drained. This match, if there was a match to check out on, to me, this was it, and I feel bad saying that, but Gunther did take away the victory. I don't see the program continuing past tonight, as I think they're going to go on to better, bigger and better things. And then we got to see Braun Breaker challenge Dolph Ziggler for the NXT Heavyweight title. Braun Breaker is already a former NXT Heavyweight champion. Can we talk about that for a minute? The son of Rick Steiner is already a former heavyweight champion less than a year into his WWE career. That's big. I'm seeing people on Twitter talking about putting Braun Breaker on the main roster and giving him a run similar to Brock Lesnar when he debuted with a company in 2002. And Brock Lesnar debuted in April and went on to be a WWE champion by August. 4 months. That's huge, and I honestly see it. I see it. Braun Breaker, it took me a minute to kind of get used to him. I think he still has some work to do on the mic, but he's not as bad as a lot of other people are. But Dolph Ziggler is still a man that can carry the NXT brand. It's the same case as Mandy Rose. Dolph Ziggler is an established veteran, and honestly, he was spinning his wheels on the main roster. Him and Robert Roode weren't doing anything. So to see Dolph Ziggler have new direction in NXT, to see him spearheading a company, be a big fish in a small pond, I'm happy to see it. I do wish Braun Breaker got to have his feel-good moment on WrestleMania weekend, but maybe it's a similar case as with Cora Jade. WWE sees it happening. Just not yet. All right, guys, I'm going to take a quick break. We're going to get some word from our sponsors in here, and then I'm going to be covering the WrestleMania 38 card. And we're back. All right, guys, we're covering WrestleMania 38 now. All right, so to start, so first complaint I'm going to say right now, you guys have a 2-hour pre-show with zero matches. 2 hours of just people talking and going over hype videos that you're just going to put in the actual card anyway. So what's the point? What's the point? I can't stand it. If there were matches, I would understand. I literally tuned in for the whole 2 hours of the first night's pre-show and there was no matches. And I was like, okay, well, I guess I know better for next time. But here's the thing. A match got cut from the Saturday card. So I was like, well, then it's probably going to end up on the pre-show for Sunday. So I'm going to watch the pre-show on Sunday. I watched the whole 2 hours. No match. Oh my God. Imagine that there were matches here that could have done with more time. Just imagine if they could have just been put on the pre-show. Just imagine that. Go on, think about it for a minute. Anyway, all right, so the first match to kick off Saturday night was the Usos defending the SmackDown Tag Team titles against Shinsuke Nakamura and Rick Boogs, and unfortunately, we may never know how this match was originally supposed to end. You see, Rick Boogs was already lifting one Uso brother. The other Uso brother would jump on him. This was fireman's carry style for the visual audience. And then Rick Boogs' leg visibly gave out. He dropped them both. He tagged out. He rolled to the floor in immense pain. We kind of got an improv finish where the Usos defeated Shinsuke in what became a handicap match to retain the SmackDown Tag Team titles. Later on, we would find out from a report that Rick Boogs, and I can't believe I'm saying this right now, the doctors say that his quadriceps was too strong for the tendon in one of the tendons in his patella. There may only be one tendon. I'm not a doctor, and I don't have the report in front of me, but from what I read, apparently his quadriceps was so strong that in the process of trying to lift both the Usos, it literally tore the tendon right off of his kneecap. Just imagine that. You have a quad that's so strong that you're exerting so much pressure on it that it literally rips the tendon off of the bone. That's some hardcore shit right there. Boogs did not skip leg day. Unfortunately, he apparently also didn't stretch before this match. Remember to get your stretches in, people. In all seriousness, though, we do wish the best and a fast and well-done recovery to Mr. Rick Boogs. Who knows? Maybe they could have won the SmackDown Tag Team titles. I honestly could have seen it happening. I don't want the Usos to lose. However, the Usos have also worked through every tag team on SmackDown right now, so I feel like we were due for a title change just to keep the division fresh. At this point, we may have to go to the well of taking two singles wrestlers and combining them to take on the Usos. I'm not sure where we're going with that, though. So, the next match would see Drew McIntyre defeat Happy Corbin. Not much to say about this match. So an interesting fact, and so far, no one has disputed this, so I'm going to accept this as fact. No one has kicked out of Happy Corbin's End of Days finisher until Saturday night when Drew McIntyre did it. And Corbin, counting his time in NXT, and as well as his time on the main roster, he's been with the company for, if it hasn't been 10 years, then it's going on 10 years. He's been with this company a long freaking time. I would say at least 2014, that was when I started watching NXT, when it got put on the network. I do believe he was with the company before even that, though, so we're going on 10 years, and no one's ever kicked out of his finisher until Saturday night, so that was pretty big. I honestly didn't believe it when the announcers originally said it, but everyone on Twitter and all the reporters, all the internet community that's usually really good about fact-checking, they were all in agreement. They're like, yeah, this is the first time anyone can recall anyone kicking out of Happy Corbin's finisher. That said, Drew then pissed off the internet wrestling community by cutting the ring ropes down, and then the ring crew, they were given enough time, I understand, but it took them so long, and by the time they were done, the ropes were crooked. The ropes were crooked. I don't know how that happens, but they were crooked. And I don't know how this happens, as in I don't know how a professional ring crew hired by the most well-established wrestling company in the world gets that wrong. I've seen them do quick changes. I know they can do quick changes, so I don't know what happened, because there were no cameras on the ring crew, obviously, but I digress. The next up was the Mysterios versus The Miz and Logan Paul, and I gotta say, I did not see this coming. I thought for sure, with Ray being on the cover of WWE 2K22, that he was guaranteed a win, that with how much everyone hated Logan Paul, that he was guaranteed to lose. I was wrong. But you know what? The booking was masterclass. Logan Paul still took that double 619. It was just that The Miz tagged in when the Mysterios' backs were turned. So that Miz came in, he attacked, he got the pinfall. So remember, Logan Paul didn't get the pin. The Miz got the pin. And when The Miz and Logan were celebrating, The Miz got that devilish look on his face, and he gave Logan Paul a skull-crushing finale, and I am so happy. I popped so hard. That might have been the second biggest pop of Saturday night for me. I'm not gonna lie. That was big. seeing The Miz give Logan Paul a skull-crushing finale. Masterclass booking, and you know what? You did something that it's hard for me to admit. I do want to see Logan Paul in WWE again because I want to see The Miz versus Logan Paul. And I'm going to call it right now, SummerSlam. SummerSlam's in Vegas this year, I believe. Miz versus Logan Paul, SummerSlam, Las Vegas, Allegiant Stadium. I say make it happen, but I think they're already making it happen. All right, a match that easily could have been main event. Becky Lynch defends the Raw Women's title against Bianca Belair. Both women had amazing entrances. Becky got to enter in a car. She had an MCU-esque opening logo. She had, like, a getup. People were saying David Bowie. I personally was thinking the chick from Fifth Element, but that's just me. Bianca Belair got to have, I believe it was Texas State University's band, play her entrance theme as she went down to the ring. Both women looked fantastic. This was an absolute brilliant athletic contest. Plenty of storytelling. Bianca was selling that throat injury very well. The high intensity between these two. And I'll say this right now. The beginning of the match when Bianca went for that handshake and we had the sequence of events where we thought this match was going to end in seconds, just like it did at SummerSlam when they first met for the SmackDown Women's title. That was brilliant storytelling. It gripped my emotions from the very beginning. And you know what? That's what you need. You need to grip the crowd right from the beginning because guess what? Now they're hanging on to every single move you do. And I'm so proud of these women and how far they have come. Bianca Belair did defeat Becky Lynch to become the new Raw Women's Champion, which, by the way, I do believe this is a fact. I believe Bianca Belair is the first, I want to say she's the first woman, period, to go into WrestleMania, two WrestleManias in a row without a title and walk away with the title. I might be wrong on that. I think that's a fact, though. I'm pretty sure she's the first woman to walk into two WrestleManias in a row, no title, walk out with title. Someone feel free to fact check me on that. Seth Rollins' mystery opponent, and I shit you not, my dad at one point had me convinced that it was going to be Bray Wyatt. I got so scared it was going to be Bray Wyatt and not Cody Rhodes because as much as the internet likes to act like they know everything, like the closer we got to this match, the more I was like, oh my God, it really could be anyone though. Like they could just say, fuck you. We're not going to have Cody Rhodes tonight. We're going to save him for Monday Night Raw. It could have been anyone. Like first me and dad were joking. I'm like, oh, it's going to be a boogeyman. Oh, it's James Ellsworth. Yeah. Like I'm just making jokes. And then dad was like, what if it's The Undertaker? Since, as we said, The Undertaker earlier in this podcast, if The Undertaker ended his speech with never say never. And then I was like, oh my God, what if it's Triple H? What if it's Triple H? What if the retirement was just a fake out? And then my dad's like, what if it's Bray Wyatt? We haven't heard anything from him. And then the lights went out and I saw all the phone lights come on just like Fireflies used to. And I was like, oh my God, is it? And then I heard a very dark tone, like a dark garbled voice to signal the entrance theme. And I was like, oh my God, is it? And then we got to hear adrenaline in my soul and everyone ready for Cody Rhodes. I know that's not the actual lyrics, but oh my God, Cody Rhodes, the fact that he got to keep his music, he got to keep everything that he made for himself. Everyone wants to say, oh, well, he got to keep all the stuff he had in AEW. No, this is the character that he presented himself as. And it's a sign that maybe there's some truth to the rumors that Cody Rhodes has some creative control in his new contract of the WWE. Because it is official. This is not a one-off. As I am recording this right now, my father is in the living room watching Monday Night Raw, watching Cody Rhodes make an appearance. I don't know what's happening. I'm dedicated to this. I have a big scheduling error, I'm not going to lie. So I'm recording a lot of this half of the podcast last minute, but Cody Rhodes and Seth Rollins had what I will gladly give a 5-star match. Match of the fucking night. Oh my God. I almost don't even want to talk about spots. I just want you guys to get Peacock, even if it's the $5 a month plan. Watch this match. If there is one match that you watch this year so far. It's Cody Rhodes versus Seth Rollins. This match is the early contender for match of the year. I'm saying that right now. I might be voting match of the year, Cody Rhodes versus Seth Rollins, for the Pro Wrestling Illustrated Awards. I genuinely think that this could do it. So with that said, Cody Rhodes does defeat Seth Rollins. I'll say this much, though. They protected Seth really well because it took three different crossroads in a row in order to beat Seth. So they did a good job protecting their own top guy. But for what a lot of people thought was going to be a glorified squash, an AEW versus WWE, blah, blah, blah. No, they did Cody right. They did right by Cody. At least for one night. There's still that part of me where I'm like expecting Vince to turn around and be like, well, you're fired. But for WrestleMania 38, night one, they did well by Cody Rhodes. And now for the most disappointing match of the night. Charlotte Flair defeated Ronda Rousey to retain the SmackDown Women's title. I really expected Ronda to win and for Charlotte to go on vacation. I was also probably just hoping that would happen. So yeah, Charlotte is still the champion. I don't know what that means for the direction of Ronda Rousey, because Ronda's character is almost exclusively a champion or a challenger. Even when she was starting out with the company, like, she started out with, I want to fight some of the best. And there wasn't a lot for her to do outside of the title picture because of how big a marquee name she was. So I don't know what's next to Ronda Rousey. It's possible that Bayley is going to come back to challenge Charlotte Flair for that SmackDown Women's title. But as long as Ronda Rousey is in the picture, I don't know what else could happen for the title picture other than Charlotte, Bayley, and Ronda. It could have been Toni Storm, but Toni Storm is now in AEW because she just couldn't stand working with Charlotte, from what I understand. And I don't blame, I haven't gone to work with Charlotte myself, so I can't say that I dislike Charlotte. I don't know Charlotte, but if all the shit that I hear is true, then oh my god, I'm glad I don't know her. So, no judgment on Toni Storm's part, but it's SmackDown's women's division is looking pretty barren, as could be explained by the fact that we did not have a WrestleMania Women's Battle Royal this year. You know, just like how we almost didn't have a Women's Royal Rumble because we had to call in every single part-timer and even borrow from Impact Wrestling in order to have an actual Rumble match. Good God. Charlotte ended up winning. It wasn't without cheating, however, because if I recall, I do believe Charlotte tapped out at one point. But Charlotte put Ronda away with a big boot. And then we had the KO show. Kevin Owens with special guest Stone Cold Steve Austin. And oh my god, the year is 2022. It is 19 years plus since Stone Cold Steve Austin last wrestled a match. And Stone Cold wrestled. On April 2nd, 2022, Stone Cold Steve Austin fought Kevin Owens in a no-holds-barred match, and it was amazing. And I'm not saying amazing like Cody Rhodes, Seth Rollins amazing. I'm saying nostalgia, pure entertainment. This was an absolutely fantastic match. It was everything that it needed to be. Steve Austin hits Kevin Owens with a stunner. So now Kevin gets to live a dream. Then Byron Saxton gets to live a dream because he got to go in the ring, have a beer with Stone Cold, and he got to eat a stunner. And Stone Cold got to send the crowd home happy on Saturday. Alright, so now that that brings us to tomorrow. By the way, in case you were wondering, the match that got cut from Saturday night was The New Day versus Sheamus and Ridge Holland. We'll get to that in a bit. Sunday night, WrestleMania 38, night 2. The opening match, as I guessed it would be, was the Raw Tag Team title match. This was an all-around great match. I'm happy for all six men that were involved in this match. Before this match even happened, Triple H came out and he left his boots in the ring. So, just to confirm that Triple H is in fact retired, and we will miss you. I literally lost two people recently as far as retirements go. because when I first started getting into wrestling, it was 2008, and two men that were on top of the business were Undertaker and Triple H. So I genuinely am going to miss these men. They helped shape my love of professional wrestling. So I just have to say that right now as I'm getting hit with a wave of emotion, because I'm just like, man, it's real. Triple H really laced up the boots and left him in the middle of the ring, and it's over. And he didn't have to put a single person over on the way out. Oh, God. I love you, Hunter. Anyway, RK-Bro defeated both the Street Profits and Alpha Academy to retain the Raw Tag Team titles. This is the tag team that was never supposed to last, both in reality and in storyline, I feel like. But Randy Orton and Matt Riddle, they are going on... They're on a run that they're both incredibly happy with. The morale of the tag team division is on high. I thought the timing was right for the Street Profits to win the tag team titles, but I guess as long as RK-Bro is making merch money, they're just going to keep them together until that money well runs dry. In the meantime, though, Chad Gable has found new life with, like, Chad Gable has just proven that he is an all-around performer, both as an athlete and as a comedic effect, because that shush, like, that is... I love it. Even just the facial expression he gives when he does it. He's so over the top, and it's perfect. The Street Profits tried to celebrate with RK-Bro and new WWE recruit Gable Stevenson, freshly retired from the NCAA. Chad Gable kind of smacked the cup out of Stevenson's hand, tried to tell him to shush, and Gable suplexed the shit out of Gable. I just realized that Gable Stevenson and Chad Gable, is that, am I remembering his name correctly? Is it really Gable Stevenson? I am checking this on, I am correct. It is Gable Stevenson. Oh, you already know what's going to happen. Gable Stevenson's got to fight Chad Gable for the rights to the name Gable. He's just going to be Stevenson, or he's just going to be Chad. It's one or the other. You know how this works in WWE. Unlike in AEW, where you could say that Adam's going to win the AEW World title, and you'll be 100% correct. All right, in the next match, which, very, very little of note here, Bobby Lashley defeats Omos. The third match, I am, Johnny Knoxville defeated Sami Zayn, but did he, though? Did he, though? Did he, though? I will say right now, and I'm going to be disappointed in Sammy if he doesn't say this on SmackDown, his shoulders weren't on the mat. His shoulders were on a giant mouse trap. This was a no disqualifications match, just to clarify. That's right, Sammy was being pinned underneath the trappings of a mouse trap, among all the other jackass hijinks that were going on. He got body slammed by Wee Man, which I'll admit was actually super impressive, because Sammy's gotta be twice Wee Man's weight. Like, just imagine trying to body slam double your body weight, and that's what Wee Man just did. So I'm actually fucking impressed with Wee Man. Knoxville, no. He's a glorified idiot, and I'm not big into Johnny Knoxville, so I was disappointed to see him win. But hey, I get it. It's good fun. Sends the crowd home happy. Next up was the Fatal 4-Way Women's Tag Team title match. Gosh, what do I say here? First off, all the women, they had great entrances. Liv and Rhea. I want to know what's going on with Liv Morgan and Rhea Ripley. I kind of hope that tag team sticks around past Mania. They had a connection going on. Like, they had Batman. Well, Rhea had terrible Batman gear. I'm going to say that right now. She had good makeup. She had good Batman makeup, but the mask, it needed some work. But her and Liv as Catwoman, there was a vibe there, and they were living it. Their interactions with each other, that, like, they are a perfect tag team. In my mind, like, they worked well together. They had good tag team maneuvers. They had the same aesthetic together. So I feel like those two, I think they can remain. I feel like it would be good for them to remain a tag team, because I don't see them having anything to do going forward. Now that Bianca Belair is the champion, they're not likely to get title shots or they're not likely to get serious runs at the title anytime soon. Carmella and Zelina Vega could get runs, but they're likely going to be facing the new women's tag team champions in Sasha Banks and Naomi. I'm sorry, but the tag team division, literally, I remember when the women's tag team division used to have like legitimate tag teams in it. And this match was literally just a bunch of teams that were thrown together at the last minute. And I'm just so disappointed. Also, another complaint I have is, why is this match have different rules than the triple threat tag title match? Because in the triple threat tag title match, we had one member of each team in the ring legal at all times. And that's how it should be, in my opinion. For the Fatal 4-Way women's tag title match, they were like, oh no, it's only two women, period. Like only two women, one from a team. Like, it can't be two women from the same team, because that's the New Age Outlaw rule. And the two tag teams that don't have anyone in there, oh well, you're just going to have to tag yourself in at some point. That doesn't make sense to me. That's a terrible rule, in my opinion. And I don't see how it helped matters here, because it was a free-for-all. There was three separate free-for-alls. Like, how does your rule of, oh well, only two women can be legal at a time make any sense? If anything, it's even more restrictive, because now they have to worry about remembering who the hell is legal, when otherwise they could just be like, okay, well, there's a 50-50 chance I'm about to pin someone that's legal. So, come on. Oh my god. Edge versus AJ Styles. There were points where I did not think this match was going to be as good as I was hoping it would be. First off, the very beginning, when AJ Styles comes out and he's already bleeding. There was an accident with pyrotechnics, from what I understand, but literally the side of his face, it looked like part of his skin was completely burned off and he was bleeding. And I was like, I couldn't believe it. And then Edge came out. Edge had an amazing entrance. These guys had such a terrific match. It was everything I wanted it to be. And I would have given them maybe five more minutes of time, but they did absolutely brilliant with the time that they had. The story that's coming out of this, though, is the fact that Damian Priest got involved. A man who I thought wasn't even going to get on the card, but here he is. AJ Styles going for that phenomenal forearm, and Damian Priest, he doesn't attack him. He just makes his presence known. AJ's distracted. AJ goes to the phenomenal forearm, but that distraction was enough for Edge to spear him in midair and get the victory. And then Edge and Priest stand side by side. I'm completely for this tag team. There's rumors that this might grow into a full-blown faction, but just thinking of the fact that Edge could be leading the Stars of Tomorrow, that's something that I feel like is well-deserved for Edge. I feel like that's a perfect spot for where he is in his career, and it's exactly the kind of spotlight that Damian Priest needs, as he's been getting lost in the shuffle ever since he lost the United States title. Hell, even when he was the United States champion, he was getting lost in the shuffle. But now there is a giant spotlight on him. You thought you know him? Well, you don't. All right, and then we had Sheamus and Ridge Holland defeat the New Day in a two-minute match. A two-minute match that, while there was a touching tribute to Big E with Kofi and Xavier, King Xavier, wearing his gear that was inspired by Big E, I couldn't even focus on the match because fucking Butch, a.k.a. Pete Dunne, was literally just trying to fight everyone. He literally almost got Sheamus and Ridge disqualified like three different times. Sheamus had to carry Butch around because Butch kept trying to kill people. And so, after Sheamus and Ridge won, Butch is trying to beat the hell out of Xavier still, and that's just how we end it. So apparently Pete Dunne, now known as Butch, just has the gimmick that he's a violent monster that needs to be held back. But he doesn't, like, I'm sorry, just the way, like, someone said it best, they treat him like a child. I can't take him seriously. The way he's dressed, the way that he acts when he's trying to fight someone, the way that these two men that are like over a foot taller than him are pulling him off of people, and it's like, dude, I'm sorry, but this doesn't work. Up next is Pat McAfee versus Austin Theory. Pat McAfee had such an entrance here. He got to punt a football into the crowd. He was escorted by the Dallas Cowboy cheerleaders. This was a proper use of them, not giving them like the first 10-15 minutes to open Saturday night. No, fucking just have them bring Pat McAfee to the ring. If they just did that, I would have been happier. But then Pat McAfee gets to live his dream of wrestling at WrestleMania. He got to face Austin Theory, and this was such a great match. Pat got the feel-good moment. He got to defeat Austin. And when he defeated him, Vince McMahon, who was at ringside, kind of went to Austin Theory. And then Pat McAfee literally, like, starts talking some shit. And you can hear the announcers. The announcers are like, oh, no, no, Cole, you better get your boy. And Michael Cole's trying to get Pat's attention. Like, Pat, just get out of the ring. You had your moment. Come over here. Let's celebrate. And Vince is like, oh, you want a piece of me? And then he takes the suit off. He's got his tank top on. He's as jacked as a man, as a geriatric old man can be. He gets in the ring, and then a ref gets in the ring, and I love the reaction from the commentators when the ref gets in the ring, because commentary's just like, what the hell's the ref doing in there? Why is the ref in the ring? Why, damn it, why? Well, the bell rings, and of course, no one's going to disqualify Mr. McMahon, so Austin Theory just comes in there, beats the shit out of Pat McAfee. Vince McMahon beats the shit out of McAfee, and Vince pins Pat McAfee. And when Vince and Austin Theory are celebrating, you hear the glass break and Stone Cold! Stone Cold! Stone Cold Steve Austin comes down, stuns Austin Theory, and then he stuns Vince McMahon. Worst stunner in history. Vince's legs gave out just from getting kicked. And then Pat McAfee went to celebrate with him. And my favorite meme right now is after Pat McAfee gets stunned and sells it like crazy, he rolls out of the ring and with beer still in hand is still drinking the beer as he rolls out of the ring after getting stunned. Just insane. And that all leads to the main event, the be-all, end-all. Brock Lesnar versus Roman Reigns. Brock Lesnar is a WWE World Heavyweight Champion. Roman Reigns is the Universal Champion. Roman Reigns undefeated, has not been pinned or submitted in well over a year, has been Universal Champion for well over a year. And you know what? You got to acknowledge him. Because Roman Reigns defeated Brock Lesnar in a less of an exciting match. Like, I'm actually going to see if I can get the time for that match right now. But Roman Reigns, he defeated Brock Lesnar, retained the Universal title, and won the WWE Championship. And let's see here. Results from night two. Okay, it was like 12 minutes. So 15 minutes curtain to curtain for them, which is about what I would have put them at. And yeah, Sheamus and Ridge Holland defeating the New Day, 1 minute 40 seconds. So they were probably told they had fucking like 4 minutes, but curtain to curtain. Edge and AJ Styles got 24 minutes, 5 seconds. So they were probably told 27 minutes. They were probably told 30 minutes curtain to curtain, but they cut it a little short when they sent Priest out there. But yeah, so that wasn't bad, honestly. That was a really good show. Night one, in my opinion, was better than night two, but overall, it was a brilliant WrestleMania. It had a very lackluster build, but the night itself was absolutely fantastic. It sold really well. I'm sure by the time you guys hear this, Monday Night Raw is absolutely amazing. You're getting all the latest updates from that. The next pay-per-view. What's the next pay-per-view? WrestleMania Backlash, which is coming to New England. It's going to be in Providence, Rhode Island, May 7th. That's going to be an absolutely fantastic show. I have no idea what we're going to see there. Are we going to see the Universal and WWE titles defended as one belt? Similar to when Tetsuya Naito, not Naito, but, or was it Naito? I think it was. No, Kota Ibushi. I'm thinking of Kota Ibushi. When Kota Ibushi defended the IWGP heavyweight and intercontinental titles, both two belts, but one defense. Is it similar to that? Or is he going to have to defend them both titles, like, one at a time each night? That's what I'm hoping is going to happen, but I'm sure we'll figure it out. I'm sure someone's going to win Money in the Bank and cash in and win one of those titles. Yeah, that's probably what's going to happen. Roman Reigns is just going to be champion until someone gets Money in the Bank, and then he's going to lose one title in a match, and then he's going to lose the other title to a Money in the Bank cash-in. And then we're just not going to see him again for, like, a couple months. and then it'll come back stronger than ever. That's my official prediction for the future. Money in the Bank's not till like, what, July though? Yeah, because we got WrestleMania Backlash, then Hell in a Cell is in Chicago, and then Money in the Bank. I forget where Money in the Bank is, but I know it's in July. So this has been tons of fun, guys. Make sure to check out RDog20 on Twitch, where I'm going to be, where I play a lot of WWE 2K22. I play Sifu, Horizon Forbidden West sometimes, and some game randomizers. Check out Clark Dion, and because this coming up, this summer and spring are coming, man. We're already in spring, summer's coming up. So hopefully I will be able to talk about being booked for a couple of shows ring announcing wise. I'm super excited at the possibilities that are coming. But until then, thank you to everyone for tuning in. Share this with all of your friends. Let them all know that we're in this. And yeah, much love and enjoy the rest of your day.